whenever you guys are ready.
Holy God, man, it's yours.
It's shiny.
Yeah.
Are we on?
Is this on?
Yeah, no, you're recording.
Oh, we're so recording.
We got the shininess.
Yeah, we got the shininess. So we're recording here. It's just another beautiful day here in the studio with my brother, with my rabbi, Rabbi Durbin.
Yeah.
This is Father Christian, and we're about to do part two of a series that two-part series about the Ten Commandments. You know, do you remember this? It was like maybe six weeks ago we dove into the first half of the commandments. Mm-hmm. I think we thought we would get through all 10.
Yeah.
Do we think we would probably get through all 10?
Well, I think the intention was, and the thought as we planned for it, for that first one is, we'll go through the 10 commandments and what if we have 40 minutes of dead air? And now looking at it of, 2 hours of going through the 10 commandments.
Yeah.
You know, it's
we had a rapid fire it. We had a rapid fire because
I think if we had one more hour, I think we'd be able to really go real deep into it.
Yeah. So we of course, as you can tell, that this episode is part two of the relevancy and the practicality of the Ten Commandments. Are the Ten Commandments practical in the 21st century? Have they become just an outdated legalistic form that maybe worked once upon a time for a civilization that drastically needed that kind of structure? Or have we evolved and grown to a place where we don't need that anymore, where we get it? You know, that. So, do we still need them? Are they important? Are they just boxes that we checked off? That we check off, or is there a whole world underneath these commandments? And that really do feed the human experience and make the human experience a more fulfilling human experience. I think that's what we're going to examine in on this one. Mm-hmm. So, first, we also want to just say thank you. Thank you all for those who tune into this podcast, for a priest and a rabbi, wherever, which one you're tuning in. And if you're on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or whatever, we would be so grateful if you would give a rating, and because it helps our exposure. It helps for this content to be put higher on the list, and to leave a comment and to share it. You know, when we see it shared on social media, we're just so happy that you do that and just say, hey, check out these guys. It's priest and a rabbi. They talk about a lot of cool stuff, from everything from just current topics to religious topics to Christian's hair, Father Christian's hair, which today has a tremendous amount of gel in it because I couldn't use a blow dryer. I say, I'm not afraid to admit that.
Well, I love your openness and your honesty.
Yeah.
That you sit there in the morning for 45 minutes to blow dry your mane.
I mean, 45 minutes would just use it, but my electric bill would be insane. Like 5 minutes, you move it in the right direction. You know, don't forget, I spent 12 years in Los Angeles. You know, so
hair is important.
Yeah,
hair is important.
Yeah, so you know, I'm a metrosexual. You know, I mean, so I just, you know, I get it. So you get the right hair product, you're good to go.
You know, and it's funny. It's funny.
How are you going to follow up on this one?
So I can follow up on this by largely, you know, as you came into the studio a little bit earlier before, and we happened to talk about the helmet style hair and the shininess, and you know, thinking to myself, you know, why am I poking fun at it? And I think it goes to that commandment, thou shalt not covet. I think I'm envious. I think that's what it boils down to, is I myself am jealous and am envious of your beautiful hair,
of my Donnie Brasco slick back hair right now. Yeah, it's not a fugazi, it's real. Yeah. It's real. So well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, any aliens tuning in from far off outer space, we're happy to have you here on this podcast for Priest and a Rabbi. And to take on today, we'll really be focusing on the final six, really the final five. For as we know that, you know, the first four are really about a relationship with God, and the final six about a relationship with your fellow man. Let me be gender inclusive here, your fellow man and woman. fellow human being. So so stay tuned. It's fun stuff, and it's just there's so much underneath all these commandments, and we're just excited to share with you. So enjoy the podcast, and we're going to see you on the flip side.
And their guests, and are not necessarily those of WSTU. St. Mary's Episcopal Church and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents a priest and a rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Hey, good morning, good morning, good morning, everybody. Buenos dias. This is Father Christian, and sitting next to me, don't call him just the Rabu, but he is the Rabbi. He is Rabbi Matthew Durbin, and the two of us create this show or come up with it called A Priest and a Rabbi, and we are so happy to be here this morning. Rabbi, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good. It seems like we've truncated our brand name. That it used to be A Priest and a Rabbi Walk into a Radio Station, to which we literally just walked into.
Yes.
But I think out of brevity, we shortened it to just a priest and a rabbi.
Well, it's kind of like two guys, a girl, in a pizza place. Eventually just went to two guys and a girl, and then I think it was just a guy and a girl or something. They kept shortening it as the years went on.
Wait, yeah. That's an actual pizza place?
Well, it was a TV show.
Oh,
It was a TV show that started off like Ryan Reynolds and a bunch of other people were in it, and it was two guys, a girl, in a pizza place, and then they very quickly said, we're not saying this every week, and they dropped it down in size to where it eventually got to just two guys and a girl.
When was this show, in the 90s?
Late 90s, early 2000s.
You're too young for that.
What are you talking about? That was my wheelhouse.
Okay, all right, my bad.
It's like how they changed the internet, right? So, you know, we know it now as the World Wide Web, but do we know what it was originally called?
Al Gore?
The Mesh. The Mesh.
Okay. But that sounds like a new nightclub in L.A.
Yeah.
You going to the Mesh? Or maybe Berlin?
Yeah.
Are you going to the Mesh tonight?
I'll check it out. Go mesh it up.
Go mesh it up. Well, let's hopefully we don't mesh up this episode too much. Just a reminder, you know, we have a podcast that uses a lot of the content that's here on this radio show that you can find on all platforms, and we would love it as the community continues to build for you to go on to whatever podcast platform you like, whether it's iTunes or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Play, and just put in A Priest and a Rabbi, and we'd be so grateful for you to subscribe, for you to give a rating, and we always love a good rating because it just helps boost its availability to the rest of the population that's searching and seeking for this content, and then leave a comment, and we love a comment of just what's been working, what other stuff would you like, or any questions that come up on these episodes. So please, right now, if you're right near your phone, hopefully not driving, or on a computer, just jump on there and subscribe to our podcast. We'd be so generous and give it a nice rating. And when that happens, you know, Rabbi and I give out free hugs, safe hugs.
Mm-hmm.
Safe hugs. So,
and they're free.
Yes. And we always ask for permission first.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like you need to state that. Mike is saying yes. This is
No Joe Biden hugs.
Yeah. I was going to go there, but I thought, like, you know, the low hanging fruit.
It was low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Is it too soon?
Yeah.
Is it too soon?
Yeah. Yeah. Boy. Oh, boy. All right. So, you know, today we got an awesome episode. It's going to actually be part two of an episode we had about maybe six to eight weeks ago, which was us wrestling with the Ten Commandments. And how practical are they now in the 21st century? Do they really change your life? Are they really a true way of a guidance in life? We see so many things in our world that within they become sort of extinct in the way of how they really do relate to us as human beings, whether it's the original Commodore computer to you know, using smoke signals to send communication. But now we have this document that you could say it's up to 3,500 years old, and does it really truly pertain to us? So we did that before. So check out that first episode. You can see, you can find that on our podcast. But today we're going to wrestle with the other five, or other six, really the last six, the last five commandments, and say how practical they are. But before we jump into that, you know, we are, you and I are both in the midst of some pretty busy seasons when it comes to our respective religions that we've committed our lives to in servitude.
Absolutely.
So you got Passover right around the corner.
Yeah, so we have Passover's coming up in 2 weeks. 2 weeks tonight, actually on the 19th. And it's a major, major, major festival. You know, as Jews, we have three. We call them Shalosh Regalim. Shalosh, Chag Shtaim Shalosh, three. Regel in Hebrew is a leg. Three legs, three-legged festival. What can that possibly mean? You know, for us as Jews, it is the understanding that there are three major pilgrim festivals, right? And three major pilgrim festivals to which we travel to, you know, traditionally to the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. But in and of itself, Passover itself becomes the first Hebrew month. Now, you know, we look at it from the perspective that, oh, a new year. You know, as Jews, we celebrate the new year on the first of Tishrei, which happens to be Rosh Hashanah, the head of the new year. But that actually is the seventh month in the Hebrew calendar. But, you know, we're approaching this notion of Nisan, the Hebrew month, to which is the first. And the reason why, as Jews, that we celebrate it is because it is the story of our freedom. You know, we recall the Exodus from Egypt. The notion that, you know, Pharaoh had enslaved the Jewish people, and we move from slavery towards redemption, towards freedom. And it's major status in terms of, you know, it's a seven-day holiday. It is commanded in the Torah. It is commanded in the Bible that says it, you shall not eat leavened bread, that it is 7 days that we recall the Exodus from Egypt.
So how are you guys prepping for that? Is there any preparation that's happening now, or is that really coming up later? Or is
it... So it's coming up in the next couple weeks.
But do you prepare for it now in your services, or is it just really more of an administrative preparation, but there's not more of a liturgical or spiritual preparation for this?
Well, I mean, spiritually we do prepare, not so many weeks in advance, but I think, you know, I'll speak personally, what my wife and I have done, and it comes out of Eastern European tradition, and it's custom, is to, and the Torah says to rid your house of chametz, and chametz being leavened bread.
Yeah.
So what we've done in the past is we take morsels of bread.
Okay.
We wrap them in tinfoil, and I scatter them around my house.
And, it sounds like something that would happen in Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we get our kids, you know, usually in the evening, to search for the chametz. So they'll, you know, we turn off the lights, we get flashlights, you know, a little traditionally
cool.
We get a feather, you know, and a candle, and we'd search around the house for these morsels of chametz to rid our house of it. And we are pretty meticulous about it. We go through all of our pantry, all of our goods, to try and find anything that is leavened in some way. And we take it, and in the past what we've done is we've donated to, you know, organizations like House of Hope or those institutions that could use the support.
Sure.
And really it's getting rid of those elements in the house. A, for temptation.
You're starting that now?
We'll probably start it in probably a week or two.
Okay. So yeah. In a week or two, that's when you start to get it. Because right now we're in the midst of Lent, mm-hmm. and that's the 40-day journey towards Easter. And so right now we're right in the thick of it, and we're right around the corner from Palm Sunday, which really is the big entrance and the entrance into Holy Week, which is the final week before Easter. So there's a lot of programmatic stuff that happens around the church to prepare your heart and your mind and disciplines that are taken on for Christians that hopefully should really influence disciplines that you take on for the rest of your life, but for spiritual formation.
Well, I will say that we are, you know, the holiday of Passover itself, you know, it is 7 days, and we're actually really excited. Because I think you and I have an amazing program coming up on the 26th of April.
Right.
On a Friday evening, where we've invited both of our youth groups.
Yes.
To be involved. I think from a temple perspective, we're going to do like a mock Seder to acclimate and to introduce, you know, Passover to your folk. And, right. and the hope is that your folk will introduce us to Easter.
I thought you were going to say, and our hope is that your folk will convert to Judaism.
We don't proselytize.
But say that, but I've caught you many times talking about how you evangelize, which I'm very proud of you. I'm very proud of you.
No, what we do is as Jews, we talk about how amazing our belief and our strength of our people are. But you know, it's interesting because I'm actually really inspired by this. And I know I met with my youth group director yesterday, and I know we're meeting next week. And there's just something really, really inspiring about sharing of you know, a major holiday together.
Sure.
You know, to remove some of those stereotypes or those boundaries or those walls that, you know, perhaps we don't understand. And I had said to my youth group director yesterday, I'm actually really excited because I do have questions that, you know, I've been thinking about really all my life as growing up as a Jew, that you know, I'm sure from a Christian perspective are just very basic that you have been born and raised with, where for me, I feel like I am in search of a deeper understanding and a more well-rounded understanding of, you know, a major holiday that you guys,
right,
that you guys subscribe to. And it's just, I'm really excited about it. I hope your teens come, and, you know, hopefully our teens come as well, and just have a really engaging and social environment to be able to express our belief.
Yes. It's a Judeo-Christian belief because it's the Seder meal. I mean, as Christians, we have to understand that. We have to know that. We have to know what it means, what's the importance of it, why, always, because Jesus was a Jew and died a Jew. So if we're not completely aware and ingrained and really have that understanding, then we really don't fully understand the lens that our Savior was coming from. Mm-hmm. And I've heard of Seders being done by led by Christians, and I just like, that's kind of cute, but it's just great to be able to pair up with a temple and with a Jewish congregation and share this together, and we'll talk about Easter. And I think it'll also reflect how well we've done informing our youth, because there's going to be questions being asked, and if our youth are like, I don't know the answer to that.
But then
it's not their fault. It's more you look at the leader.
I think it obviously goes on both ends. Is you know, the understanding how well do our communities understand, you know, Passover itself? Which, you know, look, as Jews, it's the one highly celebrated and performed festival that we have. And I think, you know, it's great that both you and I, as well as our youth directors, will be present and really facilitate the conversation.
It'll be good. So, all right. So we're going to jump into these to the Ten Commandments again. If you recall, we did do this about 6 weeks ago. I can't name I can't give you the number of the episode, but it's on there. If you go on to our podcasts. Or if you go onto the WSTU YouTube page, you'll see the show's on there. But if you have questions and comments about the Ten Commandments, please, we love getting phone calls, 772-220-9788. That is 772-220-WSTU. Coincidentally or not coincidentally. All right. So we ended up last time. We kind of went, you know, you can split up the Ten Commandments into this, your relationship with God, and then your relationship with your fellow man, mm-hmm. Fellow human being. And so we went and we got to number five last time. So we started to dip into the relationship with your fellow human being. and talking about honor your father and your mother. And so we went into that and started to, obviously the family unit is just this cornerstone of civilization and the importance of the family unit. We realize that, but we also understand just how much of how broken the family unit has become. Really, it's not just an American thing, you know, throughout the world. And then how, as a religious institutions, hopefully, and other institutions are working to sort of empower and to restore the family unit. So we got that far, and we struggled.
But I think we also looked at the notion, especially with honor thy mother and father, right? That notion, as we say in Hebrew, kabed, right? Kabed, which means to honor. It means, from because Hebrew is such a multivocal language, it means heavy. And I think that there is something there about not a burden, but the heaviness of it. And there's a difference between honoring thy mother and father and respecting thy mother and father. And I think that notion between respect and honor, there is that line that we draw within the sand of you know, what does it mean to honor? And in some semblance, is there a disconnect between honoring and respecting? Because I think we can respect our parents, we can honor our parents, but there could be some division that happens between what one expects of us or demands of us that may run counter to our own beliefs.
So are you saying that you can honor your parents without respecting them?
No, I'm saying in terms of honoring my parents, but at the same time having autonomy of my own belief that may run counter to what perhaps was given to me, if that makes it.
Well, sure. That means you're not just blindly being obedient. I mean, you obey. Okay, can we say it's appropriate that this commandment suggests that you obey, mm-hmm. or that's not a part of honor?
No, I think in some senses we can.
Okay, so there's an obedience to it. There's an obedience to your father and your mother. And last time we got into the idea, well, what if your father and mother are just terrible mm-hmm. at parenting? And so, and that what they're teaching or showing you is just something that's just not a healthy habit mm-hmm. at all. How do you then step into your own autonomy, still trying to honor them because they are your father and mother, they brought you into this world, but then at the same time having your own autonomy to say, you know what, this is not right, and mm-hmm. this pack of wolves that I'm being raised by are teaching me habits that are not great. Mm-hmm. And so then therefore, are you being disobedient mm-hmm. by saying no? Or by moving out early, mm-hmm. or by just really taking a stance and getting out of Dodge and mm-hmm. saying, and then you start to, in a way, are you not honoring your parents if you see that you have there's abuse going on, there's something that's very not healthy that's happening, that you decide on your own to get out of Dodge and leave the house and not respond to maybe phone calls and not really do your own thing. Is that you being a healthy individual and just trying to take good care of yourself and be and respond to your own gifts in a healthy way and you take care of your heart? But if you cut off your parents in the process of that or disobey them by saying you need to get over here now, are you disobeying the commandment?
Well, I think in that semblance it's also about you know, in that way, especially with abuse, I think that there's something there too of the perpetuation, that it just perpetuates. And I think in order to have that insight, not that it's cutting off one's family, but being able to say there's a disconnect. There's a disconnect that I feel that is, as you said, is unhealthy in some way. And how do I get out of that cycle so that I can effectively bring that sense of spirituality, that sense of humanity back into my own world so that I can climb to the ranks of where I need or want or desire to be.
Because maybe what God is getting at, too, is if you have parents or you're living with a parent whose, let's say, addiction is just ruining their life, and that it is maybe healthier for you to move in with another family member, that to completely dishonor your parent and just say you're a wasteoid and I'm going over here is going to leave a mark on your heart, because you could never, that relationship you have with the parent, no matter how how deep their struggles may be, that in a way you need to have that honor and that love of them, because that never goes away. That scar is horrific, of severing, completely severing the ties. You know, the stories that we hear of people who've had just these horrific relationships with their parents, but then still later on in life just want to find some kind of reconciliation, just to find some peace in their life. So if something happens where the parent is in a place where they're struggling with addiction, they can't be a good parent, and you need to move out and get out there at age 12 and go move in with a friend or something like that, you're definitely not obeying your parents. You're obeying what your gut and maybe what other family members are leading you in. But you still got to honor that person as your father and mother, doing the best they know right now in their life. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's a lot of these get tricky. You know, they get tricky. They're not just clean cut things. You know, I've watched a lot of commentaries on these, and they talk about how the family is the building block, and you have to obey and honor it. But they don't never get into, well, what if the family is completely dysfunctional to the place where there is abuse, there's addiction, and there's other horrific things
going on. But I think that's also the aim, or perhaps the expectation of the of the Ten Commandments themselves. They're interpretive. They're not black and white. I think the ways to which, I mean, look, some are black and white, right? Thou shalt not murder, for example, or thou shalt not steal.
But that I don't think that's just that black and white, though. We'll get to that.
Absolutely. But I also think that you know, they become the blueprint. They become the guiding principle for us to try and live our lives as ethically, as morally, as sound as we can as human beings, with the knowledge that we've been given through that important through those important statements.
I mean, I think there's a reason why the Ten Commandments are still alive and still looked at and still as a cornerstone from a Judeo-Christian front. There's a reason why Moses is still on the roof of the Congress. When you look up on the ceiling, there's Moses there. I mean, it has informed our codes and ethics, you know, here in the Western world. It's definitely here in the States. And so it hasn't like just gone by the wayside. It's not relevant anymore. I mean, this is humanity, and the human experience it's still the same human experience or what it means to be a human being. These 10 codes have been not, I don't think there's any of these you could cross out and say, well, it's not relevant anymore in 2019. So let's continue on here. So let's look at this. So you shall not murder. You bringing up this before. It can easily get brushed off. We were talking about this at church the other day. It's like, you know, hopefully most of us in the congregation can sit there and say, yeah, great, didn't murder, good. Check off that box. I'm ready to roll. Next commandment.
But I think also that commandment is also challenging based on interpretation. Not so much interpretation, but translation. Because I've read many translations. Our translation itself says, and the word itself, thou shalt not murder. But yet I've seen in the King James Version or the New Revised Standard Edition or what have you, thou shalt not kill. And I think that there's a huge difference between yeah, murdering and killing. And I think, look, in some semblance, we kill animals for subsistence, for food. We kill plants and vegetation for food. But murder itself, of taking away human life, that in and of itself, I mean, it is, at least in my mind, there's a part that says it's black and white. You shall not take away someone else's life.
So what happens on the battlefield? Is that kill or murder? I mean, now we're getting to ethics and to Jewish,
sure,
and Christian ethics here of
the
know,
rules
justifiable
of engagement,
war.
What happens in
yes,
the ways of war?
Yes.
You know, is it justified? And I think that's a great question. I think that that's a huge topic in and of itself. When is killing in some degree, when is it justified? Is war justified? What happens in the event of war? That we know that, unfortunately, what happens in our modern time is that there are casualties in times of war. Is it justified? But I think if we took it from a human-to-human interaction and put aside, you know, the issues of war and strife within the world,
mm-hmm,
you know, what that commandment in and of itself, thou shalt not murder, you know, what is its implication?
Well, I, from a Christian perspective, that when it gets brought forth where Jesus in Matthew is talking about murder, he says, you know, you've heard that you shall not murder, But he takes a step. He tries to go even deeper and saying, well, he's always trying to get to the heart. Let's get to the heart. What's going on in your heart? Because where your treasure is, right? I mean, where your that's where you're going to find the kingdom of heaven. So if in your heart is holding hopefully the treasure of the kingdom of heaven, and if you have any kind of, he says, what can lead to murder, right? So if you have hatred in your heart, mm-hmm. that's brewing around there. Let's be wary of that, my friends. You know, Jesus is saying that can grow and manifest into breaking all of these commandments, right?
They all spill in some degree into one another.
Yeah, I mean, we will get to this with covet. You know, we talked about this the other day. The covet, thou shalt not covet, can lead to all of these. It can lead to adultery. It can lead to murdering. It can lead to stealing for sure. Not honoring your parents, but the idea of hatred, that you have this hate for someone, and he says, you know, you need to love your enemies. You know, let's flip the script on this. You need to bless your enemies, and because of the hope of the transformation of your enemy's heart, mm-hmm. that if you have enough of the, and you can only do that if you have the strength and power of God. You can't do that on your own as a human being. As a human being, it's just, I don't know. I mean, if someone is really being really brutal towards you and showing you a lot of hatred, it's extremely hard. I mean, you need some MLK power not to be able to respond with violence. But if you can somehow in your prayer life and through fasting and to bless your enemy, the hope of the kingdom is that their heart is transformed. And now someone has come home to a place of love. That's not easy. I mean, this is easier said than done. And that takes all the strength and power of turning to God and saying, God, I got this person. I got this bully. I got this individual that I just hate. But to be aware, because, you know, Jesus is saying that can lead, hatred can lead to violence, and violence can lead to retribution, and retribution can lead to murder.
But
so
I think also
it's not just about murder, it's about hatred.
But I think when we unpack some of those challenges that we're faced with, right? When we look at the hatred in our heart, or we look at the temptation to do something that perhaps is unbecoming of us, what is it really? What is the essence, right, of what may or may not be performed? And I think especially with the hatred in our heart, 9 times out of 10, and I think the statement is true, is the things that we hate about other people are the things that we actually hate about ourselves. And I think it is about awareness, about self-awareness, about how we understand ourselves before we're able to, you know, take it from the next level. And I think, you know, if we deal with challenging people, or we deal with people that, you know, just viscerally turn us the wrong way, what is its real essence? I don't think it's really having the hatred in our heart. I think it's the hatred within our own selves that, you know, why am I angry about this situation? Why am I frustrated? Why am I this? Well, because actually these are the things that, you know, I recognize of my own limitations or my own restrictions or those things that I personally would like to change of and in myself that perhaps I'm not able or I don't have the ability at this moment to try and change. But I think it is about self-awareness.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, I would love, and we don't have time today to go into this, but, you know, the roots of racism, mm-hmm. you know, is that where that if hatred comes from a place inside of our own part, of our own brokenness, of our own divisiveness inside of our own heart, how does that feed into racism? But again, we'll just plant that seed and come back to that.
I think it's an interesting one too, because I think also, you know, beyond racism or discrimination or
homophobia,
you know,
whatever,
anti-Semitism,
yeah.
You know, I think it is about, you know, it's about the scapegoat. Who can I blame because I'm not willing to accept responsibility or accountability for myself? And the easy scapegoat is to blame somebody else.
Yeah. Or take action, and how do you take action in a positive way? It's so much easier to take action in a negative way.
Absolutely.
That's the easier way. Positive way of trying to make a positive solution and of healing is a different. Or going over to talk to your Jewish friend or someone who looks differently, acts differently than you, to really get to know their heart. Again, mm-hmm. getting back to the heart. Okay, let's do one more before we take a break. let's go to number 7. So adultery, right? So adultery, I was over at Bethesda by the Sea and gave a little brief sermon on this idea. We can easily just check off boxes in our religiosity and say we're good. And the Ten Commandments is tempting for us to do that for some of these because, you know, Well, the stats would show, actually, maybe not all of us can check off the boxes. Depending on which research you look at, between 30 and up to 70%, they'll say that adultery affects marriages. The 70%, if seems awfully high to me. I've heard 50%, so we're batting 500. I would like to believe it gets lower to 30, but how do we get back down to 0%? God is just saying, again, this goes back to honor for thy father, thy mother, gets back to the family institution, that marriage is so much better, that when it's not shared, this beautiful thing, the sexual life that you have, the romance, the sharing of emotions and vulnerability, it's so enriched when you just commit everything to it. And even during the hardest and roughest of times, you're going to get the counseling, you're going to work through it because it's committed to this one person. That's where the fruit is. But
I think it's also, like you just said, it's the sharing. And I think sometimes we shut down in some way of communication, and I think it's an interesting challenge. You know, the commandment, this is thou shalt not commit adultery, because I think we both are it's a very basic understanding and connotation is, look, if we do engage in that adulterous behavior, you know what happens? I potentially can break up a family.
Yeah.
I'm hurting others around me.
Yep.
I'm hurting myself in some way. And I am betraying somebody that I've committed my life to. And I think that I think with all the commandments, it is so multifaceted that it's the ripple effect of what happens to the one I get involved with, their personal life beyond just the relationship perspective, but their family, their friends, their community, everything else. And it just ripples and ripples and ripples to, you know, that notion of, you know, it is a commandment, you know. And I remember when I was in rabbinical school, I had a colleague of mine, and he was very black and white, very academic. For him, he had said throughout rabbinical school, you know, the rabbinate is a blessing. It is something that he felt very, very, very connected to. But he said, as a congregational rabbi, was something he didn't believe in. Not that he didn't believe in community, but he said, look, for me, I'm an academic, and I prefer the written word rather than community. And subsequently, you know, years and years and years later, he now is serving as the rabbi in Singapore and found community. But I remember when we were sitting in rabbinical school, and I think this was the second year or third year of rabbinical school, and we got to the notion of a practical rabbinics of looking at some of the Ten Commandments. And he said, no, if you break a commandment, you are cut off. You are cut off from the community. You've broken a commandment. And he was very black and white. And somebody in my class had said, well, how do you express that when it comes to thou shalt not commit adultery? And he said, if you commit adultery, I want you out of my community. And I remember I was in a small class. There were about five or six of us in rabbinical school at the time. And he had said, the rest of my classmates had said, are you aware of what you're saying? People make mistakes. People are challenged. There are extenuating circumstances that you may not be aware of. And he said, I don't care. It's a commandment. If you break it, you are cut off from your community. And for him, it was black and white, because he saw it from the perspective of, you are...
Was he married?
No.
See, I mean, I think at the right there is... The legalistic way of looking at these commandments sometimes can be just as detrimental, I think, is where you're going to, that this black and white way of looking at it. And from a Christian perspective, where Jesus would say, okay, so yeah, we all know that adultery is bad, but let's get ahead of the game. Let's get ahead of the eight ball. So if you start noticing your eyes wandering, you know, in Matthew, it talks about the gospel. Matthew says, pluck out your eye and so you won't get tempted. I mean, Jesus is not saying perform surgery and to really literally take out your eye, but just look the other way and start to ask the questions to yourself. Why am I starting to wander a little bit here? Mm-hmm. Why am I starting to talk to the woman in cubicle 7 a little bit longer here? Why am I starting to think about her? I'm starting to get fantasies over here. What's and to just catch yourself here first, but not just beating yourself up, but just saying, okay, because if you just say, I can't do this, this is wrong, I don't think that's going to solve the problem. There's something else going on, maybe in your marriage, maybe in your own heart, that you need to look into and start praying upon, maybe seeing a counselor about, and saying, catch it right at the beginning, and saying, or trusted spiritual advisor, to go to your rabbi or go to your priest or go to whatever and say, I'm starting to have this right now. And not just so you just get confession, because I don't, yes, the confession will help, but you need to start looking at the seeds of saying, well, maybe it's because I feel like our marriage is starting to get a little dry, or maybe it's because my wife doesn't respect me so much, or I feel like we've lost the mojo in our marriage, or our sex life has just kind of disappeared, or we don't laugh as much. That can be tended to.
Sure.
Those seeds can be. So let's get back to the grounds of it. But is the awareness of it? Because you say don't do adultery. Well, great, but I think we need to flesh it out.
And it's interesting because in that conversation, you know, when we do role playing scenarios. Right. And I think what he recognized at the end was maybe it isn't so black and white, because at the end of the day, you know, what he recognized at the end was if somebody comes to me, what I've, you know, and what the conversation spilled into was you are making a judgment call to which you don't have the knowledge nor the ability to make that judgment on somebody
else. He's not married.
No, not married. No. And I definitely get from that experience, from that experience perspective. But, you know, you'll look back into that specific class, you know, when somebody said, you know, how would you interact in a situation like that? You know, I think the responsibility of clergy is to listen.
Yes.
And not to impose, well, the commandment says, God said to Moses, you shall not commit adultery. Well, yes, it is a statement. It is an understanding, because obviously there is spillage and other stuff that goes into that commandment. But also the ability for us as clergy to be able to listen, the ability to, in some degree, empathize in terms of the extenuating circumstances, not to condone it or to allow it to happen, but to be able to talk through what those challenges are and how do we go about rectifying the situation.
Yes, the healing.
Yes,
the restoration.
You know, I had a gentleman years ago. Who was undergoing conversion. And he had said to me, a lot of stuff gets revealed. And halfway through our studies, he had said, Rabbi, I have to be forthcoming with you. Okay? He said, look, I had a woman who made an advancement on me, and I accepted. Okay? I said, does your wife know? Yes, and we've been working through it for the last 10, 14 some odd years. The challenge with this specific challenge was the person to whom he had a relationship with was 17, so it was she was a minor, and you know, really talking through what those challenges were, and I struggled because I think in some semblance I put my own understanding and my own thoughts in it. Am I comfortable with this gentleman? I have kids in my building. Can't have you here when there are kids. You spent 3 years in prison. You know, are you coming to me because you've gone to other churches and other organizations who have detracted you in some way or have shunned you in some way, and you felt that the Jews are an accepting people? And well, why not? You know, what were the other extenuating circumstances? And I think that was a really big challenge of do I continue? And if I don't continue, is it because I put my own self, my own thoughts, my own perspective in of you've broken a commandment? Because with that commandment has come, thou shalt not covet, because the coveting in and itself, the thought process, the thoughts themselves largely spill into temptation. You know, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. We may think that it's really a very easy understanding, but really it's complicated.
I know. It's very complicated, and we're going to continue on that complication because all these commandments are starting to come together here. You know, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet, thou shalt not adultery. We need to take a quick break, but 772-220-9788. If you got a story, if you want a call to share about these Ten Commandments, please give us a call here at WSTU. So this is a priest and a rabbi, 772-220-9788, and we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be right back. Hey everyone, it's Father Christian, and it is Lent during this time. And if you are someone who does practice Lent during the Christian season, I want to invite you into a variety of things happening at St. Mary's Episcopal Church right here in Stuart. We have a Lenten lunchtime concert series every Wednesday from 12 to 12:30, and then we will be serving a lunch in the Pinger Center from 11:30 to 1. That's just an $8 donation. So that's all the way up to Easter every Wednesday. Then we have a Lenten series with Vic Copan, who's from Palm Beach Atlantic. So we'll be serving a simple soup supper every Wednesday night, and then he'll be leading us on a reflection from at 6:30 p.m. He is the head of ministry at Palm Beach Atlantic. And then also on March 19th, we have a night of healing with Janet Helms, who is the founder and director of Orphan Heart Ministries. And she will be doing a wonderful thing of leading us in a group healing, of grief healing, of soul healing. It's very powerful stuff. She leads 30,000 people sometimes doing this in East Africa. So I want to invite you all into what's happening at St. Mary's, especially during this holy time of Lent. God bless you.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on A Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was What Do Women Really Want in a Man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained, over 50 hours of training, to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast. All right, welcome back to A Priest and a Rabbi, the place where you get two clergy folks from a Judeo-Christian background just diving into topics and wrestling back and forth. And sometimes we're right on the same page and other times we're not, but it's all beautiful. It's all good. And hopefully it creates good radio for you as a listener. 772-220-9788 on that AM dial. We're continuing on here with our wrestling match with the Ten Commandments, their practicability, their relevancy here in 2019. And we just got done with adultery, and we keep on trying to. The theme here is not just look at the law itself that's there, but what's underneath it, and it's always getting back to the heart. of what's stirring in your heart. So if you're not honoring your parents, you know, it's not just you're this horrible person and you broke this commandment and you're kicked out of the tribe. What's going on in that household and what's going on in your heart, the reason why you don't respect or honor? And is there a conversation or something that needs to happen with you and the parents? The same thing with your spouse. If you're seeing the signs and the seeds that where you're starting to feel this, these temptations coming on, you get ahead of it, as opposed to if you just say, well, I won't commit adultery. But then at the same time, you know, there's these fantasies, there's this desiring, there's this coveting that's happening, and you're getting attention from someone else, whether, you know, it's from the opposite sex who's really coming on to you. And you're realizing you're getting weak here. This is not a time to say, okay, thou shalt not commit adultery. No, look at the seeds. What's going on in your heart right now to know? Because that can be cared for. That can be attended to. There is healing. And from a Christian perspective, absolutely. We believe in the cross. We believe in when you fall into a place where it's almost like in a death-like place, there can be restoration and healing and repentance, and there can be renewal. And that's what we believe. I think we would agree on that, of a restoration of life. And hopefully if you get ahead of it before it gets real bad. So, you know, number eight here is thou shalt not steal, which thou shalt not steal, again, there's in some of, you know, we're pulling from Exodus and Deuteronomy here, but and there's some explanation given to that. But thou shalt not steal, I mean, now you can say intellectual property, someone's self-esteem, the way you talk about someone, the way you treat them. Are you stealing their pride, their honor? Because you stole that from them, the way you talk abusively to someone.
But I think it goes back to that same premise, right? If I steal, I am taking something else away from somebody else. Like if my family's starving and we have no food and I have no money and I'm desperate and I steal that loaf of bread to be able to feed my family, for they don't know when the next meal is coming from. Is that justified? And I think from a Jewish perspective, no, it's not justified. Well, but my family will die. They need food. But what you've done is you've now taken away that baker's subsistence, that baker's understanding. And at the end of the day, you've taken away from his family or her family to support your own. So where do we go to? And I think you're right that it's not, you know, that obviously that's that, you know, that's the case itself that we would look at, you know, in the 17th century. I mean, we wouldn't have to deal with intellectual property or plagiarism or whatever it is. But in today's understanding and today's world, there are so many extenuating factors that lead to that conception of thou shalt not steal.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, if you hear a really good sermon and you're like, oh, that's good, I'm going to steal that. Mm-hmm. You know, is that stealing? You know, before my previous life, I was an actor. You go and you see a choice that an actor makes for a role that you might be playing later on. You say, oh, I'm going to take that. I'm going to steal that. But, how far do you really go with that? Because you're going to take it. You're going to renew it. You're going to do something. Maybe you – How far does it go? I think the main thing here is respect. It's having respect for your fellow brother and sister. I mean, again, these commandments, these last six commandments are about having respect and not breaking a bond with your fellow human being. When you steal, when you covet, when you commit adultery, you are breaking a bond with your fellow human being. And God wants community with him and with your fellow humankind. And so stealing is breaking that respect, you know. And what does it really mean to break that respect by taking from someone that's not yours? Now, going back to your previous example, there is Catholic doctrine that says if you are broke as a joke and you don't and you need to feed your family and your family's at the place where you might die, that it's like the Les Mis scene that, you know, he stole a loaf of bread just because of he was at rock bottom, and it's okay to do that if it's for the feeding of your family.
I definitely respect that, and certainly I'm not challenging Jean Valjean on that. But I think you know the flip side of it is, you know, you look at you know the experience of Jean Valjean of stealing that loaf of bread to feed his family. Would it have harmed him at all to go in and to speak with that baker to say, sir, my family is starving. I'm appealing to you from human to human. Please see the compassion. You got two options. Either somebody says no or here.
Right.
You know, and I think that there's – even with intellectual ability or intellectual property from that matter, right, the challenge is, look, you hear a great sermon. You go, man, that would go over well in my community. Well, it's called attribution.
But you probably during that sermon got to recognize the man or woman who you say, you know, I was the great priest or the great blah 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 once said yada 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 and expound sure. upon that. You got to show some love,
absolutely, and attribution and respect yeah. and everything else to someone else's ideas.
Yeah,
and I think that it's also about, you know, putting yourself into it. Of, okay, you know, I heard this great quote or, you know, this great story or this, that, and the other, and it's made me think, you know, and to bring that
yeah, you
in
get influenced.
A little bit. Absolutely.
You get influence. You know, The Weeknd, the great, I mean, the Weeknd as in the performer, you know, it's so obvious he's been influenced by Michael Jackson, which is now weird to say, but it's his whole style and everything he does and his voice is like, it's Michael Jackson. Do people say he's stealing Michael Jackson's, you know, singing style? And no, I mean, they just say he's just heavily influenced. It's a way of admiration. But yeah, okay. So let's keep this going because it's all it's gonna all comes together here. Number nine is you know, false evidence of not lying, right? Of bearing false witness to it. And this I think again gets to what's going on in your heart. That if you start building up little lies to get you through things, it starts taking away your integrity as a human being. If everything else, if stealing was about respect for your other human being, I think this that lying just chews away at your integrity. And then what do you stand for? Do you stand for truth? And then you start to question what is truth, right? Because you can start to believe the lie. And it's funny, you know, little kids are so bad at lying sometimes, you can tell. I don't know if you've experienced it with your daughter. Is it just like, you just tell, you know? But adults, the more you work at it, the more you exercise it, the more you really believe in it and realize if I have to tell this lie to get through this, if not, there's going to be major ramifications. You repeat it, you stick to it, and you start to believe it. And it blew my mind when Lance Armstrong was so committed to being so standing so firm that he didn't take steroids. That he was so firm on it and then finally broke and said, yeah, actually I have. Or there was a baseball player from Milwaukee who was just so, I mean, he would get up so adamantly. Was it Bauer? Who was it? Mike, do you know the baseball player in Milwaukee? He
Not
would
my
sit
thing.
There. He would attack the press and just be like, how dare you? I've never taken a steroid before. And then finally breaks 9 months later and just says, I made a horrible decision. It's what I did. It's like, holy cow, you were so committed to that publicly, globally now. You're talking about a sport that's just seen everywhere, and you were so committed to that lie. And it's so easy and tempting in our hearts. Again, we need to be so aware and guard our hearts. It's such an overused Christian term.
But I think
it's
also,
true.
You know, from a Jewish perspective as well, I mean, look, that whole notion, you shall not bear false witness against you know, your neighbor. You know, a tale bearer among you, you know, and I think that there's something really incredible about it. You know, we say in Hebrew that it would be lashon hara, like evil speech, talking badly about somebody else. And I think it is such a Jewish ethic and such a Jewish moral value that we look, gossiping. We're human. We want to hear this, that, and the other.
But gossip's not really lying. Is it?
But in terms of it's influencing others to believe something that may or may not be true. And you know, I believe in the statement that is, you know, those who spread malicious rumors
okay.
are just as guilty as those who believe them. And I think that there's something, you know, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, which is the understanding that, you know, it is a ripple effect. If you present that, you've not only tarnished somebody else's reputation or somebody else's life, but in some ways, you've also tarnished your own. You're going to be known as the talebearer.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're the narc.
But why is it so pervasive? Well, here's the other part of this. So telling the truth and speaking the truth, as we know, if you're the whistleblower, And if you finally, if you have been keeping up a lie and you're like saying, I know the Lord wants me to speak truthfully and I want to be a person of integrity, there's going to be fallout. Sure. There's going to be hurt. There's going to be pain, especially if it has to deal with, we go back to adultery, that if you want to be truthful with your spouse, if you're truthful about that, it might break the marriage. It might end the marriage. He or she might leave you, you know? So this is where it gets tricky about speaking the truth and not bearing false witness. So that's where I think, again, the commandments of getting back to your heart. Start at the small seed so you don't have to deal with that situation when it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. Because if you do have these horrible lies that you have formed into truths inside your life, and then you're really having your consciousness is just growing and growing, and you're growing deep in your faith, you're going to get to a place where you feel like, I have to speak, I have to say something. And at that point, there will be hurt and pain, but you just put the hope and faith that speaking the truth will bring the restoration and the freshness and the newness that will come out of it. But there will be pain. That's why, again, is just keeping, that's why the commandments of sticking to it, but looking at what is underneath, of looking at your, what are you feeding into your heart? Whether it's, do you catch yourself envying the neighbor? Do you catch yourself saying gossip? Do you catch yourself with little white lies? Do you catch yourself maybe hugging your friend a little bit too long because you need something? So that, you know, I think we've covered a lot of covet. So we've already got the number 10 here, and because we're just winding down the show here. But again, it's at the Ten Commandments. It's, I think, what we've been just constantly doing is wrestling with the digging beneath the surface of what's underneath that. And this can always continue, and I think this will continue to pop up in our radio shows here.
But I think also, you know, the ability, you know, we started, you know, this episode, we started the other one about the Ten Commandments. How relevant is it today? What meaning does it have today? And I think what we've come to at the end, I think, is it is exceptionally meaningful. It is important. They
don't
may have been written thousands of years ago. Don't write them off.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that from a Judeo-Christian understanding, explore them. Go beyond just thou shall not and start exploring for yourselves what meaning, what value, what is the underlying message, and how. And like what you said at the end, too, is the recognition. How can I, if I recognize these signs that I'm getting too close, I'm becoming tempted in some way? How I, you know, if I'm spreading malicious rumors, how do I stop myself?
And why am I Absolutely. Doing it? Well, look at your own heart. All right, really quickly before we go, I just want to pitch that we have a prayer walk that is happening on April 14th. That's going to be happening at. Starting at St. Monica's Episcopal Church at 4 p.m. It's on Palm Sunday, and we're all walking. Of course, my brothers and sisters over at Rabbi's Temple are invited, but it is a united prayer walk where we will walk around East Stewart and West Stewart, and we'll break bread at St. Mary's. So,
and on Monday evening at 7 o'clock, we at Temple Beit Hayam at the Rappaport Center have Titus Kafar is a artist who will be joining us on Art, History, and Social Change. That is 7 o'clock at Temple Beit Hayam.
God bless you all. We'll see you then.